Hello, 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 drama listeners. I had to give you the RuPaul intro there because we have yet another Ru girl on the podcast this week. Honestly, we're in like our Ru era. We had Ginger Minj at the end of summer, and then obviously Jinx and Dela last week. We're also in the midst of our 6-year anniversary celebration, which, for those of you who are not up to snuff on what's going on with drama, we launched in 2019. Here we are. We made it 2025 after 6 years. We're still going strong. And in honor of those 6 years, we're releasing 6 episodes this month. Normally it's one episode a week, but we're getting you with a double double every now and then. And this week we have Plasma, who you all fell in love with on season 16 of RuPaul's Drag Race. She's releasing her new album this month, Is Miss Thing On, which is just the most hilarious title. And we had a blast chatting together. Please check that out. And of course, if you're feeling generous this month during our anniversary, we'd love if you could contribute to our Patreon, which is $5 a month to become a member of Drama Plus, where you're going to get even more than those 6 episodes this month. You're going to get some bonus episodes too, plus a whole back catalog of incredible episodes of just Connor and I chatting and some other special surprises in there. You'll also get added to that Instagram close friends. So check it out. Follow us, follow Plasma, and let's get on with the show.
Press play, curtain up and now we're in. It's time to take a spin.
With shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, I'm so excited.
I'm having such a blast already. It's, I always love these
I
ones.
know, I know. I feel like there's so much we could and should and will talk about. So I feel like we can't waste any time. But I just want to say this right at the top. I said this to our guest, but literally since January of 2024, when this queen came onto our screens and into our hearts
And into our
and
hearts.
other places, maybe too, everyone has said to me, Connor, you look like Plasma. You look like
I
Plasma.
know, which is so funny because as twins, you'd think they would tell me that. But I suppose you're shaven,
Right, shave, exactly.
more
Exact.
sprightly, the younger twin.
No, well, that is true, I guess, by a minute, but who's counting? I've never had the chance to say this in person. So I'm so glad that we get to
Yeah.
do it on the air and everyone can hear about it because I was even telling friends leading up to like, oh, like Plasma's doing the pod, Plasma's doing the pod. And they were like, well, you have to say that. That's your celebrity doppelganger. So,
Wait, I'm remembering now when Broadway's Saleha Pfeiffer did our show. She confirmed that you two do look similar.
oh,
Maybe you're
yeah.
more of twins at this point than we
That's right.
are.
Because she was like, oh my God, I'm obsessed with Drag Race.
Yes.
She was
I think the
living.
Rusical had just happened.
Okay. Period.
It's
Oh
all
my
coming
God.
back. All right, I'm going to bring our guest in. Our guest today is an international drag superstar, vocalista, and Broadway baby. You'll know this diva as the breakout star of RuPaul's Drag Race season 16, where she displayed her many talents as an actress, singer, and drag artist for the world, winning two maxi challenges in the process, including the aforementioned Rusical. Based in New York City, this entertainer is a musical theater trained artist known for her classic old Hollywood inspired style, mixing vintage glamour with modern pop culture. Since gracing our television screens, she has released viral videos such as Don't Rain on My Parade, Bloody Mary, Anything Goes, and Thanks a Lot, But No Thanks. Last year, she toured her All That Plaz cabaret show across the country ahead of debuting her new show, Is Miss Thing On? This evening of musical theater standards, classics, and even an original tune was recorded live at Joe's Pub for her first full-length album, available November 7th. The lead single, featuring friend of the pod, Jay Harrison G, is available now. So stream it and get ready for her world because she's a comer. Please welcome to drama, Plasma.
Plasma. You know, when I hear an introduction like that, it makes me feel like I've actually done something as opposed to just doom scrolling through the universe every day. So that was a lovely reminder that I'm doing something.
You've done it, you're doing it, and now you're doing drama.
And now we're doing drama. I'm coming home to the theater, which is exactly what I'd want to be. Speaking of drama, total, let's go ahead and go on a sidebar rabbit hole. Speaking of drama, on the plane here, I'm in Los Angeles right now. For our listeners at home and across the world, I'm in LA right now, and on the plane, for the first time ever, I saw Elaine Stritch at Liberty.
For the first time.
For the first time. And have you both seen it?
Oh,
Of
yeah.
course.
Okay, speaking of literally drama, Every single, just when you were like, now we're doing drama. I was like, oh my God, that's me. I'm in a white button down with a stool and 1200 people are watching.
Yes. Oh my God. They, you know, they really don't make him like that, but you know what? Your new live album is giving Elaine Stritch at the Liberty.
Well, I drink enough, so.
Sweet. Did you download it on your computer or your phone, or was it available like on the screen of the plane?
Can you imagine? They're like, this week's recommended movies from Delta Airlines, Elaine Stritch at Liberty, the onstage recording of Gypsy from the Savoy Theater. Like, yeah. Every Little Step, a Chorus Line documentary.
Well, yes.
Now that one.
Well, yes. That's not easy. They have really wonderful Wi-Fi for SkyMiles members on Delta Airlines, and I streamed it from YouTube. So I consider myself lucky. I consider myself blessed.
Was there a highlight from your inaugural viewing?
So many, actually. Probably her Noel Coward impression. That one really, really got to me. When she, Stritchy, I'm doing a musical and I need you there. Well, Mr. Coward, I just filmed a television show and I'm going to be shooting this fall. Have you seen the, I don't know if I'll be available. Stritchy, I have seen the television show.
Wait, that was just incredible.
Thank you. I also didn't know that she was that adept at impressions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, because she's just sort of screaming in every other clip I've ever heard. And then, of course, like 30 Rock.
I was just going to say her. 30 Rock.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That and, yeah, my favorite of all time is probably on 30 Rock when she goes, who cares?
She was,
you know what,
so
I love
solid
about people like Elaine Stritch, Liza Minnelli, is that they were on these sitcoms in like the third act of their career that like introduced them to newer audiences, because you don't really have Broadway stars necessarily who are household names in that way throughout their entire career.
No, and I wish Bernadette Peters was giving us that too, because like I think the last TV show she did, what was it?
Mozart in the Jungle.
Mozart in the Jungle, and I never saw it, but it looks like she took it very seriously.
Well, right. That was also an odd time, because Amazon, it was in its beginnings of its original programming moment where they were releasing scripted stuff. So people were obviously talking about it, but I also never took it in, to be honest.
Yeah. Right. It's like we were all waiting for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. We were.
She should have been on that. She could have been on that.
She could have been on that. I was on that. Why wasn't she on that?
Wait, we left that off your bio. Sorry.
Okay, wait. Fun fact. Let's start. Yeah, as long as we're going over the resume, flip to the back.
Yes, well, yes.
My first job in New York City was working background on season 4, I don't know the episode name, of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And I was in the scene where, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, I was in the scene in the Button Club, which is Joel's club, where he tells Moesha that he's gotten May pregnant, and Moesha falls off the stool and has a heart attack. And you can, if you go back and watch it, you can see my silhouette, you know, my Barbara Streisand silhouette. My twins would know it well.
Of course.
Smoking a cigarette with a bright blue light right behind me. And I literally saw it and I was like, if that had been any other nose, I would have nose by any other silhouette, smell as sweet. You know what I mean?
An American Beauty nose, right?
An American Beauty knows, yeah.
Wait, that's such a fun first job. Was that during the pandemic?
Yes. Or it was in June of 2021.
Okay.
So shooting had come back very tentatively. And we had to like go for, I had to go to Brooklyn for 2 COVID tests before the shoot day, which was the third trip to the Navy Yard, which is impossible to get to.
Worth it.
Hey, listen, I would do it again. Yeah, for that to be my first job in New York felt very cinematic. It was my like, Thoroughly Modern Millie, 3 bucks, 2 bags, 1 me moment.
No, literally. Wait, Plasma, you're so young. Recently, aka yesterday, rewatched your Whatcha Packin' with Michelle Visage. And she was like, you're literally one of the youngest ages one can be at 24. And I was thinking about your cultural knowledge of the theater greats, and just all of these reference points that you have are so, so, so incredible. And I'm wondering if you can remind us, you know, as family as we are, when all of that started.
Well, you'll remember sharply, I'm sure, like we were all gathered together at Thanksgiving at home in Ohio, you said? Ohio.
Yes, of course.
I remember the impetus behind all of it was, it has to be when I saw Wicked when I was 9 or 10.
Oh my God.
And it was my first trip. Yeah, it was, I mean, typical, you know. This season with Ariana and Cynthia is very monumental for me. But it was, I remember, like, it was my first time in New York City, and my family and I took a day trip, and we saw Wicked in the mezzanine. And my parents recount it as they weren't watching the show because I was sat on my seat, like a full foot, like on the lip of the seat, like leaning over. And they were watching the back of my head because I was that far in front of them. That was really, really important to me. And then I remember maybe a year or two later, my dad sat me down and showed me the original film of West Side Story. And I was just, again, entranced. And he was like, you know, people like make money doing that. I was like, no way, that's not just for fun. And that was it. It wasn't Funny Girl. I know everyone probably thinks that Funny Girl was like my first indoctrination. And like, it was part of my foundation of it, but it was 100% Wicked on Broadway. And then the West Side Story movie.
So
both
good.
Wait, incredible touchstones.
Would you say that's your Ring of Keys moment? We borrow that from Fun Home, which is like this moment of recognition where you realize a part of your identity that's been in there, that's ready to come out. Do you feel like it was watching Wicked or West Side Story, or was there a different performer performance that you feel like got you into it all?
Oh, you know, it probably was. I'm trying to remember. I have a more visceral memory of the first time I heard Don't Rain on My Parade. Barbara's Don't Rain on My Parade, that is.
Not Leah.
So first of all, how dare you bring that up? As I'm reading your name on the Zoom screen, and I know Leah is not fortunate enough to be able to do the same. Watch it. No, I Leah, if you're listening, hey girl, I'm glad this is an audible experience for you. No, I did grow up with Glee, and it was very raunchy for, like, you know, I was in junior high, or, you know, I was fifth grade, sixth grade when I saw it for the first time. I don't remember. And I heard Don't Rain on My Parade, and I was like, this is sensational. I'm so obsessed with this performance, and Leah Michele is just like the end, you know? And then I was like, Glee does a lot of covers. I wonder if they wrote this song for the TV show or if this is like based on something, because I had no idea. And then I remember I was sitting in my parents' RV in a, I tell this story in my barber show that I did this summer. I was sitting in my parents' RV in a butter yellow pleather chair recliner, and I heard Barbara sing Don't Rain on My Parade for the very first time. And my first thought was, this is so much better than Leah Michele. And that was like, that was the moment. We were motoring down the road somewhere in Arizona or Utah or somewhere. And I remember thinking, like, in the middle of this desolate climate, I've been given a wellspring of talent. Like, and so that was probably my truest Ring of Keys moment, was hearing Barbara sing Don't Rain on My Parade. And then, you know, People, the whole movie soundtrack of Funny Girl just like got me together.
I'm a My Man kind of gay myself.
Oh, yeah.
It's
I mean,
everything.
Yeah, it's just everything.
Did you see the revival with Beanie, Julie Benko, and Leah?
I did. I saw it in previews.
Okay, so you early. So you saw Jane Lynch as well then?
I did. I saw Jane Lynch as well.
Your Gleek dreams were all coming true there.
Uh-huh. It's exactly what I wanted out of that revival with that show.
I know. Well, listen, you know, it was kicking around before the pandemic with Adina was supposed to be Fanny Price and that.
See, and that makes a lot of sense to me. It also, okay, this is the appropriate podcast to talk about this, I would assume.
Yeah.
Have we seen the Broadway HD filmed on stage version of the West End production with Sheridan Smith?
I've only seen clips. Only to be, clips. I have to be so transparent.
So I guess it's the wrong podcast.
So I guess, oh God, yeah, I shut my computer. No, I remember I was in college and I was like, finally, we're getting Funny Girl back on the stage. And I watched it and it was so elegant, or elegantly produced. And I personally, I've like listened to the West End Legally Blonde. I know who Sheridan Smith is. I'm like, yeah, I am a little bit biased because I am a Laurel Bundy stan. And I'm a Barbra Streisand, you know, worshiper, and healthily, of course, with consent. And when I when I saw that, I was like, I just, when they bring it to Broadway, they have to find someone who can just squelch it out. They have to find a true, like, screamer, like Barbra. And then the casting came out, and I was like, well, you know, she made me laugh in Hello, Dolly, so let's give it a shot. And then my dramatic ass sat in the fourth row of previews for Beanie Feldstein.
Premium
oh,
seats.
Yeah. I was cashing out. I was like, this is the moment. This is what I've been waiting for. And I sat in the fourth row and I watched a preview, and I was so emotionally wrought by the experience of seeing it in its state that it was in, that I went home and I wrote a 4-page, single-spaced, size 12 font, Times New Roman review. And I'm sure it's still somewhere on my computer, but I published it on my private Instagram. And I was like, I want the world to know that I know you're asking for my opinion. So here it is.
Oh, wait, I need like a plasma, like this idea of you reviewing theater. I feel like your takes are probably so fresh.
Thank you. I felt a bit like Ben Brantley is rolling in his retirement grave. Like, right. I was a bit like, I remember writing some sort of dramatic bullshit about, like, you know, the legacy of Barbra Streisand is not one that any nose could ever look up to in, you know, in the infamy. And it's unfortunate that her ghost is haunting, rattling around the walls of the August Wilson Cheesecake Factory Theater.
It does.
And I just remember like writing it and I was like, this is really good.
You gagged yourself a bit there.
I got gagged them a bit for sure.
Wait, you bringing up the concept of a private Instagram, real or rumor, most Rue girls do have a second Instagram. That's not their public facing one. They keep one for their closies, you know.
I don't know. I have one, but I guess that it's the best kept secret because they're even keeping it from me. I have no idea.
Oh. Well, maybe just close friends then, you know. That's definitely a thing as well.
Yeah. Well, like when your close friends on Instagram is like 50 people, I'm like, just send out a newsletter. You know what I mean? It's don't bother with all this. And also like the close friends is all the people, all the like hot boys you have crushes on, right? Like that's what close friends is for.
literally. Yeah. So going back for a second, we jumped in to figure out your theatrical origins, but we do also like to check in with our guests. Plasma, are you well? Yes, you literally took a sip.
Yeah.
Spit take.
If there are any Star Wars fans on the pod, it's a trap.
Yeah, we do have a weird crossover, I just want to say.
Oh, great. Okay. Hi, Lucasfilm. Hi, Kathleen Kennedy. Let me come help your programming, please. Am I well? Well, am I? I don't, even in my lack of response, I think I'm giving you the answer that you're looking for, aren't I? You know what? I'll say this. I recently, as of this week, have engaged in psychiatry and therapy because I haven't pursued almost any of that since I was cast on one of the largest reality TV shows in the world. And I was like talking with a social worker and we were like going through like the intake form. And I was like, oh, by the way, I have these thoughts that I've never said out loud and they're kind of violent. Is that normal? And she was like, I'll be honest, I've never heard anyone say that before. And I am okay. I'm doing okay. I'm happy with my life. I'm working really, really hard. I'm investing a lot in my craft and in my artistry, which is really exciting. But we boiled down the end of the appointment to the state of the world is so divisive and terrifying that if anyone is truly okay, something much more sinister is wrong.
Literally.
Yeah. So I don't know if that answers your question, Your Honor, but I feel very much like my absence of feeling okay is what's tethering me to being genuinely as good as I can be.
Yeah.
It's like a little bit of a dissociative thing just in order as a form of preservation.
Yes. Yes.
And listen, we're huge mental health advocates here. So I love that you're doing
yeah,
that.
Yeah. See, you both speak in such calm, placid tones of voice.
No. Oh my God.
I feel like I came in as like Roger Rabbit.
No, I cannot imagine going on, like you said, one of the biggest reality competition shows in the world, one of the biggest shows in the world, period. And watching yourself, watching people respond to all of that, talking at you all day, every day. And, you know, we listed off this introduction of all these things that a lot of which have happened in the last year and a half. And your life has changed in such a big way. So I appreciate you being so honest about taking your mental health into your own hands and being like, wait, I need to process this plus world events, plus the, you know, existence of being in your 20s and living life, you know? So shout out to you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. I did a podcast the other day where someone was like, just out of the blue, we like ended, we like tied up our conversation topic in a nice little bow. And then they look at me and they go, Plasma, how's your love life? And I just said, next card, honey, next card. I don't know the words. Like I'm so like entrenched in what I'm doing and what I'm working on that I like every once in a while will come up for air and be like, I'm lonely. And then I'll go right back into my work.
Listen, if the work is coming in, though, it's like Bianca Del Rio, I think, had a quote years and years ago about like just saying yes to everything after Drag Race because you don't know if it's going to come around or it's going to stay around.
Exactly. It's like I was just talking with Trixie Mattel, and she was saying, I remember like after season seven, I felt like everyone else had the opportunities that I wanted. And I wasn't the it girl. I wasn't popular. I went home early and then I came back and then I went home almost immediately again. And it felt like all of the opportunities I was looking for were going to other people. So I just decided to say yes to everything and to be the hardest worker. And like, obviously, it paid off. Look at her now. By the way, she is shockingly the most kind, present, diligently conversational person I've worked with in a very long time.
Wow.
So,
Wow.
yeah. It's also okay, but I feel like this is it's sort of reflective also in the Broadway community of the most successful, the most high-ranking, the most talented people are also the people that you want to do a shot with at the bar. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes.
Like I remember I was at the Smash opening night party,
Uh-oh.
and rest in peace, Smash, loved you. Gone too soon.
Yes, agreed.
Loved. But like Robin Herter, I was around Robin Herter when they got the New York Times critics pick.
Oh, yeah.
Because, reviews are rolling in, it's opening night. And I remember like going up to Robin and I said, "You're a New York Times critics pick. Do you want to go do a shot, girl?" And she was like, "If I didn't have a matinee tomorrow, bitch, you know I'd be over there." And it was so awesome. And Robin, you still owe me that shot.
She is such a down bitch.
She's such a down bitch. Oh my God.
Love her. Yes.
Like, no one realized that her Ivy Lynn in Smash was like a whirlwind of a part. She blew through it like
I
it
know.
was nothing.
I
It was
don't know
insane.
many people who could have handled it the way that she did. And she is remarkable. She's actually, fun fact, the only person who's done our podcast three times. She is a triple drama diamond, as we call her.
A triple dama, Diamond Davenport, Cristal Dupree, of
Exactly.
course.
Exactly.
That makes
Yeah.
sense.
You mentioned all these last names. That's very Texas drag of you, but you're a one-namer in the drag world.
That's true.
Have you ever had a last name in drag?
I sure have. There are still people in New York who will not know me as anyone but Plasma LaRose.
Plasma LaRose.
Yeah, LaRose is my first drag mother's last name, and she her name is Vonda
Oh.
LaRose. She's a Chicago queen. She's a spooky girl, and she like we grew up in theater school in Oklahoma together, and she was the reason I like started physically doing drag in the state of Oklahoma because she had a pageant that was a charitable donation pageant. And it was a very, it was like when you try to justify something reckless to your parents by saying it's for charity.
Yeah.
Remember when we grew up and we did this to our parents, you guys?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Of
Right,
course.
exactly. I was like, this shared memory is so vivid. I know exactly what you mean, sis.
Of course. Period, mother. You ate that up. Yeah. So yeah, it was like one of those. So I was Plasma LaRose for a while. Before that, I tried to be Plasma Donor, like a play on Dior that's spelled like donor.
Oh yeah. Wait, that's fun.
Yeah. That's when I realized like some of my jokes were half-baked.
Well, you do call your fans our donors, yeah?
Yes.
I think that works. That's
So it lives
funny.
on. It lives on.
Yes, the legacy lives on. I have no idea if there are any donors left. That's actually not true. I have a super fan, Lily. Hi, Lily. Shout out. Who runs the Plasma Fan Club social media presence.
Yes.
Wait, which one of you just said yes in such a tone of voice?
Me, Dylan. Yeah,
Dylan, literally, I
Dylan.
can see the fear in your eyes. That's an appropriate response, I think. Oh my God.
Drag Race fans can be the most, as you know, can be the most devoted and the scariest, scariest.
Scary. Yeah, it's sometimes it's really fun. And sometimes I want to crawl in a hole and die.
Was there anyone who prepared you for that? I mean, I understand having also recently rewatched your Whatcha Packin' with Michelle Visage.
Was incredible, by the way. That Whatcha Packin' was so good, but you two really clicked and it was so natural. And I have so many questions about the producing of that interview in
Yeah.
general, because no one's holding a card, no one's anything like that. But anyway, we can get to that in a second. Dylan, what were you going to say?
Well, it was you only auditioned once for Drag
Yes.
Race and you got on in that season. And was there anyone that you were able to turn to or anyone who was able to like sort of indoctrinate you with the advice of as an incoming Rue Girl, as they're called?
Yeah. Oh my God. I had met Rosé and she came over to my apartment and looked at like everything I had on my wall and because I turned into, that meme of the guy who's like cracked out with a cigarette in one hand and he's standing in front of a pegboard covered in like
Yeah.
evidence.
Like the
That's what
murder board.
my apartment turned into, but they were sketches of gay shit. And so Rosé came over and like looked at the walls, and I'm sure she was like, "How long you been in here, girl?" And I went to the garment district every day and I bought fabric and fabric and fabric and fabric and fabric. And then I would bring my drag body with me to go straight from there to a fitting with another designer, to go home to rhinestone something, to then go get another coffee, to then go shoe shopping, to then like go have a FaceTime with a wig designer. It was madness. It was like truly doomsday bunker planning. And Rosé came over at one point, like looked at my wall. And we had a really, really fun night where she christened me with her original Jan face crack robe. And we had this whole
Great.
like knighting ceremony. And I still have the robe and I have a really, really strange video in a horrifying place of that really wonderful moment. And then not a Rue girl, but my mom flew in a week before I left to help me pack and to cook to make sure I was eating. And she literally, like, she's the super mom. And then my dad flew in the night before I left just to be there for the final preparations and for the send off. And so we pulled an all-nighter as a family, and like all of my friends got around me. And I remember a pot of coffee at like 1 in the morning where I'm just sobbing in the hallway because I'm like, I don't know how I'm gonna do it. It was like full Sarah Paulson, Ryan Murphy meltdown. Yeah. Do you remember in Roanoke, which is, oh my God, Will Shelby.
Wait, you're nailing the hoarseness to her voice too.
Oh yeah, the vocal faltering. It's my favorite thing she does. And Sarah, hey girl, I love your work so much. It's between that and her as the public defender in The People versus O.J. Simpson, whose name I'm blanking on,
Yes,
going
yes.
ashing a cigarette on her picnic table and just going, motherfucker. Those are my two like Sarah Paulson entryways.
Those were good ones. Did you watch her with your friend Beanie in the season about Monica Lewinsky?
I was
And
just talking about this with someone yesterday. Yes, I did. And
she was so good. I mean, I know we like all the prosthetics and the suits, the body work that they had going on her was insane, but
yeah.
she nailed how she would say Monica.
Oh, yeah.
Like the way she said
Monica.
it.
Just, yeah,
Oh,
when you
man.
put all of your entire soul and training and also your bottom teeth into a role, it's just, yeah. I mean, Connor, why are you gagging? You were there. Like literally, she goes, Monica. It
Yeah, it
see,
is.
an actor prepares.
I don't know if it's in your future or if it's in your desire, your dream board, but could be a good Snatch Game character as Sarah Paulson and
Linda Tripp.
or Linda Tripp.
Oh,
Yeah.
Sarah
Well,
Paulson. Oh.
could pick any of Sarah's great roles, but yeah, Sarah P.
Linda was a dirty dog.
Dirty dog. I can imagine RuPaul immediately right now. She goes, up next, we have legendary US federal employee, because she won't remember her title, and neither will I. But she'll go, we have Linda Tripp. Linda, why are you tripping, girl? And then I would just be lost from there. Yeah. But yeah, Sarah Paulson is an impression that I absolutely love to do.
So good.
And you were doing full Sarah Paulson in your hallway at 1 a.m., the pot of coffee,
Oh,
pre-Drag Race.
yes, we're back. And I remember like my parents are around me and my best friends are around me as they're like, we're still waiting on designers to get three or four of my garments in the night before I left at like 10 a.m. And because this is just Drag Race lore, you just wait. You just hope that it happens. I went to a fitting at 2 a.m. in Washington Heights. And it was like I walked into the mouse hole that all of Cinderella's mice friends were sewing her garments. It was like that. And that's what I want people to know about prepping for RuPaul's Drag Race. It's not always the Ru girls that came before you who help. It's usually a bunch of your rodent friends and your parents if you're lucky. So.
And then you went and you did so well, Plasma. Like it was such an amazing run on that season of Drag Race.
Thank
It was. I
you.
actually remember watching the premiere in New York at that hotel in Williamsburg that they turned into like a Drag Race
At the
viewing
Arlo, yes, in the ballroom.
at the Arlo. And it was kind of a hostless occasion. So you sort of took on the mantle of moderating, between the breaks and introducing, and this natural host came out of you that I was pulling from you from day one. Because not only are we watching this great premiere, but we're watching you do what a New York queen does best, which is work the room, you know?
Thank you. Well, and who was there? It was me, Nymphia, Amanda, Dawn, and Megami. And I was like, out of everyone here, three of us are in the episode that hasn't aired yet. And the other two are Dawn and Amanda. And they're just screaming. And then Megami's trying to get a word in over them. And then Nymphia doesn't want to be around literally shit.
We were like, was she silent or silenced? We couldn't figure it
Porque no los dos? I've been in a room with her where I'm like, Nymphia, oh my God, do you want to say anything? And she'll get on the mic and she'll go, no. I'm like, this is the
No, it was
leader
like
of the free drag world that we're talking to right here. Congratulations.
Listen, we watched her Very Delta interview, so
Oh.
was she on Very Delta? I didn't hear anything about it, probably because she wasn't speaking.
she was not really speaking. Yeah, it was very like she wasn't really in drag. She had like sunglasses on. She was kind of sleeping on the couch.
Oh.
Oh, yes. Let me guess. Giant yellow hoodie.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, if I'm
Yeah.
remembering
Oh my
correctly. Yeah.
God. That's my girl.
You did so well. A lot of us say like gone too soon, but you were truly eliminated way too soon on that season. But so many memorable moments, specifically that Rusical.
So good.
Unbelievable.
Thank you.
Did you feel the pressure going into that as a musical theater girly?
Honestly, no. No, I didn't. And production wanted me to. I'll never forget this. I was filming a confessional, and then my producer looked at me after we had like wrapped the confessional, and she goes, "Girl, you better turn this out, or it could be curtains for you." And I said, "Honey, you would be lucky if it was curtains for me, because I live on the stage. Like, this is the challenge that I came here to do. This is what I was brought here for. And you already gave me a Barbra Streisand live singing comedy challenge, so pat me on the back again, burp the baby, and see what happens. I'm going to annihilate these girls, and I'm not going to blink." Yeah, I
And you
was like,
did.
at that moment in the competition, I was truly in the mindset of, I swear to God, if Plain Jane takes this Rusical away from me, there will be a murder on the dance floor. And if Safira takes it, I'll understand, but I won't be happy about it.
Safira was also really good.
So good. And we sort of knew, like, when we got dressed in our flower runways, we sort of looked at each other and we were like, it's you or me, girl. I'll see you out on the ice. Like, and then the rest of the cast was sort of like, okay, well, who's going home? Like, next, please. Next card, honey. Next card.
Oh, that was my favorite runway that you did.
Mine too. Thank you. I think that the timing has never been more right for a theater girl to be on the show, other than, of course, Jinx and her like unstoppable force of a run on in the franchise. But when I realized that I auditioned once and got it, they planned a live singing Barbra Streisand comedy sketch and a Rusical based on The Sound of Music. I was like, it's like they watched my tape and they curated things for me. What the fuck is happening here? This never happens. And it felt like a victory on behalf of the theater girls to say, like, no, the theater nerds are doing something right that everyone else will recognize. And this is what it looks like. And I'm lucky enough to be
Totally.
like the Kentucky Derby winner of those challenges.
Well, and then you even gave us more with your snatch game.
Oh, well, that was a wild day. But I have no regrets. When the internet turned to me after Patty's New Yorker article came out, I was like, well, at least my impact is felt. Yeah. I talk about it on the live album. I talk about, there's a moment where I talk about why I want to do a live album, and it's because the greats who have done it are Barbara and Patty and Bernadette and others, but like that is my list. That's my great list of, these are the people who have done live recording. Of course, Judy at Carnegie Hall and Liza literally everywhere and the Broadway legends who are singing it 8 times a week. And I was like, you know what? If I'm going to consider myself worthy of those kind of opportunities, I have to take myself as seriously as these people. That's sort of the next. When you ask me if I'm well, I'm like now back in my bunker, but I'm like plotting a Broadway debut where I get to like scream at people 8 times a week, Fanny Brice style.
It definitely feels like it's in the cards. And this album, which I mean, it's to me, it feels like this crown jewel that you now have out there of like your talent on full display, because we knew what you could do, but I did not know that you could really, really sing like that in an authentic way. I mean, the single alone with Jay is just beyond. But I love the way that you've curated this show. Can you talk to us just a little bit about the process of putting together Is Miss Thing On?
Yeah, of course. And thank you. That's very kind. I've always sort of had a fascination with the meaning of my drag specifically. And I think like growing up wanting to be an actor and like, you know, when I was 12, being in acting classes and doing Tennessee Williams, not knowing what the absolute fuck is really happening. Subtextual, you know, emotionally, there's no way to know at 12. And I felt like I was always in theater school and I was always like trying to tell the truth under imaginary circumstances, but I didn't know what the truth felt like. And so when COVID shut down my theater prospects, I moved to New York and I started doing drag in lieu of that. I started living my life a little bit and meeting real people and not people who were like, well, you know, I was in the first production of A Christmas Story on Broadway, so I've always been a Broadway actor. And I was around real people who have real experiences from real communities in the real world. And when I got on Drag Race, that felt like, okay, so these things are marrying each other. Cool. And then now that I've like felt a little bit of my adult life come into fruition, I have tried to reassess what makes a good show and what makes a dramatic arc compelling and what makes the narrative of a single human interesting and impactful and empowering to others. And I did a live show in April of last year, like right before the season finale of 16 aired. And I remember thinking, like, I didn't mean to plan a show that was like emotionally compelling or like truthful. Like, you know, the truth has never been my priority. No, I'm kidding. But I found myself with a really impactful, moving show. And when I was approaching doing a live album, or when I wanted to like record media outside of Drag Race for the first time, or outside of, you know, my music videos, I was talking with my dad and I was like, yeah, like we want to get in a studio and like hire a band and, you know, like spend a couple of days recording things. And he goes, why would you do this in a studio when you know that you like performing live more? Hmm. And I was like, well, you know, it's the more professional thing to do. And he was like, but what do you want to do? What is your truth? And I was like, oh, Da Truth comes out.
Yes.
My rapper name, Da Truth. And I was like, I want to be considered among the peers in the theater community that I have now met because of this big Drag Race opportunity as someone who can hack it alongside them. And these people are singing it 8 times a week, live, unfiltered, in front of people. And everything is organic. And as fabulous and fascinating as my experience on reality TV is and was, there is a lot of contrived truth-telling for the sake of a dramatic plot or for a professional opportunity. And I loved my time on Drag Race, but a lot of the times it felt a little bit exploitative in terms of what was really true and what was really television. And so I wanted to approach this as I cannot hide. We did 2 takes. We had 2 shows on the same night at Joe's Pub, and that was it. And I told myself, if you need to cut one of the numbers because you're deeply, deeply ashamed, then cut one. Who cares? No one's going to know but the 100 people who were there. And then I didn't cut anything, which was a surprise to me because I was like coming off of a vocal collapse from a show in Provincetown because I was just singing my barber show every single night and screaming. Came back to New York, recorded my Joe's Pub show 3 days later, and then went back to P-Town and kept screaming. And so I was like, this must be the life of a showgirl.
Wow.
There it is.
Wow.
I wanted to hold myself to the standard of excellence that I have always looked up to and admired. And it was fucking hard. The album is so long because half of it is spoken. Half of it is the live show that I want people to understand. That is the preparation. The songs have already been written. The charts are being orchestrated by someone else with a musical prowess that I don't have. So like what is left is me. And this all sounds like the ramblings of a sociopathic narcissist, which like it kind of is, which is why the album is so good, because it's so, because it's insane. Am I well? You tell me.
Well, I think that it is authentically you. And that storytelling is one of my favorite elements of, it's like you're listening to an Audible, you know, recording or something like that. It's so much like you feel like you're very present and in the room that, and it speaks in a different way than a recorded studio version would have been. It's Patti LuPone doing Evita 8 shows a week and then doing the LaMouche show at night. You know, it's like this hustle that only some people can do.
That reference, oh, I could kiss you on the mouth with consent. That, yes, that's that, like I was thinking of Elaine Stritch at the Carlisle, and I was thinking of Patti at Las Mouches, and I was thinking of Bernadette at Carnegie Hall, pretentious bitch. And like Josephine Baker and Eartha Kitt doing their nightclub acts overseas because American politics rejected them. Mm-hmm. And like in this current day and age, I was thinking to myself, I live in a liberal snowflake bubble in the capital of the gay world in New York, and I have the opportunity to do something that no drag queen has done before me. And there's a quote somewhere floating out there from RuPaul who says, like, I couldn't have a music career if there weren't a computer. And I was like, that is so great for the girls who want to do that. That to me sounds like the death of my training and my art and my realness. Because if I have a vocal crack, so be it. Fun fact, you probably already know this, but on the original Broadway cast recording of Funny Girl, Barbra Streisand cracks on the last note of Don't Rain on My Parade, and they did not re-record it. It is still on the cast recording. And then she comes back for the movie version, and it's, triumphant. It's a step lower, if you've ever noticed that, but she fucking obliterated it. And the legend is, like, she was so upset by the cast recording of the original Broadway cast of Funny Girl, because that is the song. And I was like, if I crack on a big note, then I crack on a big note, and maybe someday it will live in infamy forever as I sit in my Malibu home with my cloned dogs and my underground mall, and I will never think about that moment again. So who cares? This is the real thing. This is not reality TV. This is not a multi-million-dollar Broadway show. This is just me.
Miss Thing is on.
Miss Thing is on. Exactly. The mic is hot. Miss Thing is on.
I like that you
I love
mentioned that that's
it.
your realness, because it is an authentic thing that I think also endears you to people. Like, the idea of like over perfection or certain things that are smoothed out in the studio, and then you hear it in real life and it might be different. Like, I think that that actually can isolate fans or just the casual listener or viewer.
Totally. Well, in the era of AI, in the era of AI artistry, my perspective is like there's so much from an era where that was never even conceivable that is, in my eyes and my ears, perfect.
Totally.
Yeah,
Totally.
Barbra live at the Bon Soir with like people that you can hear are irritating to her in the audience because of the way she's reacting instinctively. It's like that is more fascinating to me. Judy Garland at the end of Carnegie Hall cracking on Somewhere Over the Rainbow is more interesting to me. Screaming through The Man That Got Away because she's sweating her mascara off is more interesting to me than hearing the MGM recording. It's like fighting for the truth in an era where that it has never been more precious, not just politically, but everywhere.
In every way, we just talked about AI on a recent podcast here, but it's so terrifying to me. I feel like it's making me question almost everything I see online nowadays. Like, nothing feels super real, which is why I think the stuff that is tending, as a social media manager and also just as someone who exists in the world, the stuff that feels really authentic, organic, underproduced to an extent, sometimes like with in the studio content or just people setting their camera up and filming like direct to cam from their apartment and stuff tends to be the stuff that I want to watch rather than like this really, really, really super produced content. So that's that
Yeah,
on that.
no, 100%. That's exactly what I feel too. And I don't know. I feel like growing up wanting to do a Broadway show and having my first experience be Wicked. You go see Wicked now, and Wicked is not, with all love and respect to a massive success that is deeply compelling, Wicked is now a machine. Phantom of the Opera was a machine. There are shows that are mechanical. And I find that. Or I find myself wondering about the artists who like get the dream of playing Glinda or Elphaba on Broadway. And then they get into a rehearsal and they are like, I'm sure like the Bible is set down before them by a stage manager. It's like, this is exactly what you should do. This is exactly how long the show is. Do not stray from the path or you will be lost in the woods. And also the union will come down your ass. And in my head, I'm like, until that is my life, until I'm having to fight and negotiate with stage directions in a long-running show to make sure that I am doing something that feels real, I'm going to do the most real and vulnerable things that I can in pursuit of fucking up and finding out what the truth feels like, especially after reality TV, which is regimented. So anyway, sorry, I could ramble about this forever. I could write a book. I could write another review of Funny Girl with Beanie Feldstein. I could do so many things. I wish the cow was full of milk. I wish the walls are full of gold. I wish a lot of things.
Listen, but slotted spoons don't
Period.
hold much soup, plasma.
Baby.
And that's why I think it's so perfect, though, that you're releasing this live album right now and then in a time where it is the most authentic thing that you could do. So congratulations to you. I'm so excited for you. I'm so excited
Yes.
for everyone to hear it. So was it sort of pieces of the All That Plaz Cabaret with this new cabaret? It was sort of like an amalgamation of different shows you've written.
Yes, it very much. I took all that plaz, the cabaret I wrote last year, and I adapted it into like, okay, some of these things were bits that I don't think will land anymore. Or I had a mega medley in the middle of all that plaz that was about my run on Drag Race, which was, you know, a 15-minute mental health spiral that ended in Don't Rain on My Parade, because I love to vocally exhaust myself. And then there were a couple other things that I cut and shifted and moved around. But I wanted to create something that was, going into it, I wasn't sure if I would just release the musical portions of the evening or if I wanted to record the whole thing and produce the whole thing. And so when I listened back to the full show, I was like, this does not live without the introductions and the explanations and the bits in between. And like, I do a bit in the middle of the show called A Schloon for the Gumpert, which is a very, very deep cut from Barbra Streisand's Central Park concert in 1967. And she never published the song. It's on YouTube as a part of like the filmed concert, but it's not on any of her recordings. And if you go listen to the album, you might be able to tell why, because it is insane. And I was like, these are the things that I want to bring to light. I will do Broadway Baby. I will do Thanks a Lot But No Thanks, which even that is niche. I will do Don't Rain on My Parade. I will do That's Life, the songs that you know. But I'm going to trick you into listening to some songs that you have never heard before or some songs that you have forgotten existed because of circumstance. Like I sing a song from Dick Tracy, the movie, and it's a song called More. And I never even knew Madonna sang it until very recently, because I knew the Ruthie Henshaw version from putting it together, the Stephen Sondheim review with Carol Burnett.
Oh.
So like, welcome to my brain. Welcome to my world. It's chaos in here. But these are the things that are like driving me. These are the little like diaristic moments of my life that feel worth sharing because I've been obsessed with them. So someone out there also must feel like they're worthy of resurfacing.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's sometimes it is things you think are like super, super niche. People are just waiting to either discover or be like, oh my God, I love that too. I can't believe someone else also knows that, you know?
Yes, totally. And you know, the fact that I had to explain the plot of The Sound of Music to every drag queen at RuPaul's Drag Race one day was humiliating. And I don't intend to ever go back that far. Yeah. You know what I mean?
We can never go back that far or to before for that matter.
But we can never go back to before. And thank God for that.
Right. Okay, when you brought up the Rusical, I meant to say this earlier, but we were telling our best friend Isaiah that you were coming on and he wanted us to ask you your top three favorite Rusicals.
Oh, Isaiah, don't do this to me. I would say Wig Loose is pretty damn good. Herstory of the World with from All-Stars 2. Herstory of the World was very important to me. Alyssa Edwards. I said bang, bang. Anyway, can I say mine? Can I say the Sound of Music? That will probably be, I mean, because also The Sound of Music. Go watch the episode, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I am a deep, deep, deep fan of The Sound of Music for personal, emotional reasons. And also because it's brilliant.
Yeah.
You know what? Those are my three. And Isaiah, I'll do you one better. I'll tell you the Rusicals I'm waiting to see on Drag Race. I'm waiting to see more Black representation and they do Dream Squirrels.
Oh my God. So Hello. Good. That's waiting to be. Come on.
Yeah, come on. Also honorable mention, I will say season 17's A Chorus Line Wicked Mashup. I was a fan.
That was fun.
It was fun. And I was like, I wish that more people would be able to tell that this is a chorus line. This is literally nothing to do with The Wizard of Oz whatsoever. This is at the ballet. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
This is Dance 10 Looks 3, but it's Glinda. Hello? I'm waiting to see Dream Squirrels. I'm waiting to see, I mean, they could do a circus theme one called like Trippin' by Stephen Schwartz. You know, we've got magic to do. And it's about like getting into drag. I don't know. There's something there.
Maybe a breast side story.
Oh my God.
And that lends itself, you know, to like That's two different good, warring Dylan. Factions.
I'm devastated by that. I can't believe I didn't come up with that. Bravo. Breast side story. Are you kidding? It's amazing. And it's a battle between the two troops of drag queens. One who will never not wear a breastplate and the others who are flat chested with no ass.
There you go.
So good.
It's Plain Jane versus Naomi Smalls. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes. It's Jimbo and, oh my God. Wait, that's brilliant. World of Wonder, you need to cut Dylan McDowell a check.
And Plasma, you get some royalties too. You helped flesh it out.
Okay, so. Great. Okay, fine. All right.
Yeah.
I love it. Oh my gosh. Well, this has been so fun. It's been great getting to chat with you. before we say goodbye, we do have to end with a dose of drama. This is that piece of theater, that piece of pop culture, that piece of love or life that you want to get out of your mind and into the podcasting airwaves and leave with our listeners. We're all going to share one. Demi Lovato released a brand new album. It's not that deep. And y'all, if Demi's going to give you one thing forever and always, it is vocals. She can sing.
Did she shred it?
She shreds it. She shreds it. Even if you don't think she's going to, the chorus will hit and that voice just comes out. She starts wailing. It was reminding me how much I truly love her. And Tell Me You Love Me is one of my favorite Demi albums of all time. Everyone go back and listen to it. It's bop after bop, banger after banger. And she's got some really good songs in this one. It sounds like she's having a lot of fun. So I definitely recommend it. Don't let it get lost in the shuffle. I mean, we obviously have Plasma's album to be streaming. That's
true. Which sounds just like Demi. They're gonna be trying to top each other on the charts. I guarantee it.
Listen, I mean, I love that we're getting these fall albums from these queens. So stream it, buy it, share it, send it, all that. Dylan.
Okay. Well, I'll say my dose of drama is what I've been watching and trying to make my way through all week. And it is the third season of Ryan Murphy's Monster, which was about Ed Gein. Do you have any working knowledge of this show, Plasma?
I have only seen the clip of him dancing around the living room with someone else's face.
Yes.
Oh, and him.
Yes, yes. Oh, how sick.
How sick. Honestly, reminds me of my uncle. No. No. I can't even watch it. I couldn't watch Jeffrey Dahmer. I only made it like halfway through the Menendez brothers. And I miss, say it with me, kids, Sarah Paulson crying. That's what I miss in a Ryan Murphy production.
I know. You've cited the great performances throughout this episode, but the series was missing it. It does have Laurie Metcalf, who I mentioned this to Connor. She did sign on Script Unseen, which I think is such a risk with a Ryan Murphy project at this point, but she still delivers as she always does. And obviously Charlie Hunnam is really hot in the lead role, but it's very, very difficult material, I will say, to make your way through.
But Addison Rae is in an episode, isn't she?
She's in two episodes, in fact.
Oh, my God.
Does she get totally murdered and carved up?
She does.
Oh, damn. Oh, Addison, no.
But she's kind of giving. So I guess that's my dose of drama.
She's kind of giving.
Plasma, do you have a dose of drama to send our listeners home with? This could be a recommendation, a rant, a rave.
Yes, I do. Hearing the both of you speak has enlightened me as to something that I need to speak about. And before we start, we hinted at it earlier. My non-drag name is Taylor. And so I have been asked a lot of my new album, The Life of a Showgirl. And as someone who considers themselves a showgirl, if you're going to produce an album called The Life of a Showgirl, covered in Bob Mackie for Dita Von T's live album at the Voltaire in Las Vegas, you need to fucking sound like it. And I was a Swiftie for many, many years. I went to the Reputation tour, loved every second of it. Brilliant. If you give me an album of pop ballads and one song about getting railed, I need you to be dazzling me. I need a piano. I need a jazz lounge. I need an upright bass and I need some chutzpah in that bitch. Don't you dare come out of Dita Von T's closet with this folklore sounding ass bullshit. Like I can't. 1989 changed my life. Reputation, incredible. Folklore got me through COVID and I've had it officially. Don't bring me this, like, someone was like, Plasma, don't you love the song Elizabeth Taylor? And I was like, no, I don't. And they're like, why don't you? And I said, because a song about Elizabeth Taylor should be the one about fucking every man that you can find across your life. The song Elizabeth Taylor should be about, you know, six marriages to the most wealthy, powerful men in the world. Elizabeth Taylor should be about a jewel heist. And instead, someone had to rob the Louvre for us to get any headlines about that. So I love her. And then one last thing. This is not necessarily like a piece of pop culture that exists, but I've been thinking a lot about Cats, the Jellicle Ball.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been thinking a lot. That makes me think of the queerer revival of Company. And so I'm officially pitching it right here, right now. We need more queerified Sondheim revivals. Case in point, A Little Night Music.
I think that's the next one for sure.
Literally, if anyone in the Broadway industry is listening to this, which I imagine they are, go back and listen to A Little Night Music and tell me it's not about gays in Hell's Kitchen trying to fuck everyone. Tell me that Jinx Monsoon isn't Desiree Armfeldt.
Jinx is Desiree. And the gals that are the wife and the other woman who's like Everyday a Little Death, that duet.
Charlotte and Anne. Yes.
Say their names.
See, Anne is like a super mega twink who married a daddy. And it was like, wait, I'm a little uncomfortable. I don't understand that man. And Charlotte is Nathan Lane. I, unfortunately, am Petra.
Well, yes.
I'm Petra because while everyone's arguing at dinner, I'm fucking in the stables.
Yes.
Like, this is my latest dream, is we need a queer. It doesn't have to be, like, all gay cis men. It shouldn't be. But there is so much sexual suppression and tension in the gay community, in the queer community. And that is what A Little Night Music is all about. It's about sexual espionage, betrayal, hurt, horniness, and like at the end of the day, love.
Yes. Oh wow. A weekend in the country. So are they in the Hamptons? Are they at Fire Island? You know, what is
they're going to P-Town.
E-Town. Okay. Okay.
Yes. Or a big house in Fire Island, but I assume that it'd be P-Town because they're probably
it's multi-generational.
Yes, you can drive to P-Town. You can't drive to Fire Island. So I'm picturing like a weekend in the country is everyone in their Subarus like speeding off to Cape Cod. Like, you know?
I think you need to make a musical parody of this or something to be produced on stages soon. Because it's just waiting to happen.
Yeah, a weekend feeling cunty. Da, 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 da.
There it is.
Hello?
There it is.
I'll write it myself.
Plasma, you are so brilliant and so kind. This has been so much fun. I know that Connor and I speak for both of us when I say we've had a damn delightful time with you today.
Thank you. Me too. This is like the perfect way to start my day on the West Coast. Yes. This is an awesome.
Thank you so much. And everyone, of course, needs to stream. They need to be bumping that with your new album that's coming out November 7th.
Yes.
Okay.
November 7th.
Everyone needs to check it out. And of course, follow you. You're at Plasma NYC on social media, right?
Yes. Usually, you know, I don't know where my multiple identity disorder varies these days. But yeah, find me. I'm there.
No one will find your private page with the reviews of Funny Girl.
Unless you chose to leak them, which would be incredible. But
oh, right. Well, you know, we're going to get those sooner than the Epstein files, aren't we?
At this point, yes.
Christ. And on that note.
Yes. Thank you for everything, Plasma. And while everyone is following her, they should follow us. We're at The Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I am at Dylan McDowell. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.